Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. This is Pop Culture Man Children, your one-stop shop for pop culture ephemera and musings on movies, TV, video games, stuff like that. I'm here with my good friend and yours, Mr. Peter Marsh. Pete, how are you?
Oh man, Mike, we just recorded our Dark City recording and I thoroughly enjoyed that. And I can't believe that's what we're doing before this amazing thing we're about to talk about. So I'm super excited.
Today we're talking about something that I've wanted to talk about for a long time. RoboCop from 1987, directed by Paul Verhoeven, written by Edward Neumeier, Michael Miner, composer Basil Poliadoris, and production designer William Sandel. RoboCop. Peter, what is your connection to RoboCop?
Okay, I'm really glad you asked. So I've said this a couple times on your show. I definitely have said it on my own shows. But there's many, many movies where I've seen pretty much like the whole movie piece by piece on cable. And, you know, I know like certain scenes over and over again, especially because they're always like quoted and referenced and stuff. They're on top 10 lists. I think that I watched RoboCop and RoboCop 2 like that for most of my life. Yeah. And then when we covered the documentary, which is like 4 hours long, called RoboDoc on the LasserCast, I went back and watched it straight through, maybe for the first time straight through. And I was just like, this movie is fucking incredible.
it's so good.
Yes, yes.
It's just top to bottom quality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a superhero movie in a generic sense.
1,000% is. I was going to make that point. You know, guys that are our age, white guys that are like in their 40s or whatever, it's like, you know, RoboCop. It's just like, you know, we can't say enough good things about it, but there's a reason why,
yes.
Right? Like, it's like Ghostbusters, where like every individual thing went right at the same time and
yes.
made this random thing that's amazing.
This could have been such a terrible movie, yet somehow ends up being great. But the thing about RoboCop for the uninitiated is it works on multiple levels, and it supplies you the opportunity for multiple pleasures. RoboCop is that rare thing of it's a critique of a thing, but then it's also the thing itself. And you can like both, you know, like it doesn't, and we'll get deeper into it. It is, you know, this filmmaker, Paul Verhoeven, who is from the Netherlands, right? He's from Amsterdam. It's him kind of critiquing American culture, American consumerism, American corporate culture, our violence and sex in our media, and our trashing to those things. Which is all great, and that all works, and that's all perfect. But then at the same time, it gives you those pleasures, and I don't think it mocks you or criticizes you for liking them. It's almost like, you know, like, well, let's bring up Lynch since you and I are talking. It's like the way Lynch celebrates things that are bad for us, but he loves them. Like, Lynch loves caffeine and sugar and nicotine.
Smoking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Lynch is like, these things are bad for you, but they're also great. That's what RoboCop mm-hmm. is like. It's like, yeah, movies like this are bad, but mm-hmm. at the same time, let's indulge in that. Because even like the idea here is stupid. The name RoboCop is stupid. Like I think for people who've never seen this, they think it's like a cheesy action movie. Like they don't totally understand why people like it. But you really have to see, there's no way to describe it other than to see it. You have to see it because the tone becomes almost immediately presents itself to you because we begin to see like fake newscasts with ridiculous things and fake TV shows. There's kind of the presence of media, especially in this time, broadcast media is everywhere in this movie, which is a lot like The Dark Knight Returns, which constantly, and I think, didn't Frank Miller write like RoboCop 3 or something?
Mm-hmm.
He like
yes,
ends up getting somehow involved at the bad end of this.
I was going to say, like, you know, 1987, this is when this movie comes out. And so I'm 5 years old. I think I maybe see some of it on VHS. I definitely see it on cable because it's on cable all the time. I was going to ask you right off the bat, because I think that Paul Verhoeven is so, everything you just said, I think so much of that's based on Paul Verhoeven being the film, the director, right? What was Paul Verhoeven to you when you were a kid?
Oh gosh, honestly, nothing. My first Paul Verhoeven film I saw in college, and it was one of his early films, not made in America, and it's this very like erotic, very very like R almost X-rated film called Turkish Delight with Rutger
Oh,
Hauer. If you ever want to see Rutger
okay.
Hauer fucking and see his penis, that's the movie for you.
I got my Saturday night plans.
And then I didn't see this until later, to be honest with you. But here's the funny thing that's so ironic. When I was a kid, I had RoboCop toys. And it's so crazy when you watch this movie. Like, we did an episode a long time ago on this podcast of things that became like kids' properties that had no right being kids' properties. And somehow RoboCop did that. There was multiple RoboCop cartoons and toys. And it's like, this movie has. To see this movie and see the amount of like sexual assault and drug use and over the top violence and be like, yeah, this is for kids, or let's make this for kids is wild. So I knew RoboCop just as like through the ether. Like I was just like, yeah, RoboCop. I had RoboCop toys. I think I had his helmet. Like there was a, like a role play toy where you could like put his helmet on. And but I don't think I actually sat down and watched it until I was like, you know, in my 20s or something.
It's one of those things like through osmosis that you know about as a kid. It's just like it's there, you see it, you get the references, you might even know some of the dialogue. For me, Paul Verhoeven, I didn't necessarily know who he was, but I knew his movies really well when I was a kid because they would like play them in my cousin's house downstairs. I lived above my cousins in a house from a lot of my childhood. And I remember that my mom didn't want me to see some of his movies because they're so graphic with the violence and so graphic with like the sex and the language and stuff.
Well, when we were kids,
Because I,
like Showgirls came
yeah.
out, and that was a big thing.
Right. Showgirls was a gigantic controversy, you know, graphic sex in that one and violence too. But yeah, I mean, I think of this, I think of Total Recall. And then, like, once I eventually get like a knowledge of him and an awareness of him, that's when Starship Troopers comes out. I don't like Starship Troopers anywhere as much as I like Total Recall, and I don't like Total Recall as much as I like this. But there's something about his movies. It's like finding like a porno magazine in the woods when you were a kid and being just to have phones and stuff. It's like it's kind of like, oh, I shouldn't be looking at this, but it's so intriguing. You know, that's what he was like to me.
That's such an interesting way to put it. RoboCop's definitely my favorite of his movies too. Now that I think about it. I gotta say, I heard the story on a different podcast. I forget which podcast and I forget who told it, but it's the best direction I've ever heard of a director giving someone. And it was somebody in Starship Troopers, they were like being killed by one of the bug aliens. And supposedly Verhoeven came up to him and was like, okay, so imagine the scene is the bug like uses his like arm to like
Pincer.
puncture through him. And he's like, imagine you were being fucked in the ass by a giant monster, and it hurts so bad you're being fucked, but you also kind of love it. Action! The greatest, but you also kind of love it. Action is the greatest direction. But you know what's funny? Now that you're saying that, probably the first anything I saw of his was the shower scene from Starship Troopers, because he posits a future. Actually, it's kind of in this a little bit too. He posits a future that has less of a gender binary. And there's a scene in Starship Troopers where the men and the women are all showering together, and you see all the beautiful women. And I remember like a friend showing me that and be like, oh my God, you gotta see this thing. And that was like probably the first thing I ever saw of his. So yeah, definitely that like magazine in the woods. Like you could see some boobies.
And of course he made Basic Instinct as well, right? And that was another like super controversial movie. With Paul Verhoeven, he's this great example of when you see something by a foreign filmmaker, it's just different. You know, he's making an action movie, he's making a sci-fi movie, but it just hits in different ways than you would from a regular American sci-fi movie or action movie. You know, Danny is always championing this on the Lasser Cast about like how great foreign films are, and it, basically because no one would want to take a shot on this movie, they let this director come in, and it's just I dude, I can't tell you how great this movie is on like so many different levels. Like, have you watched RoboDoc at all or no?
Yes, I did. I watched the whole thing.
Oh, I love that so much. It's like every little detail, the costume design, the set design, the acting, the dialogue, the different characters, like it's so interesting. It's so good.
Well, I gotta, in general, I gotta say that I think it's a miracle that any movie's ever good. Like, there's so much that goes into making a movie, and one false step could kill everything. But it is always amazing, like something like this is just like lightning in the bottle. Because if you were just to describe this to somebody, it would sound like just such a stupid idea, right? And I think that's part of its charm or part of its power is it kind of knows it's a stupid idea. But that's okay because we see the creator of RoboCop in the movie, and he's this coked up like middle management executive who wants to like climb up, like even he like. It is a stupid idea. It's his stupid idea. This movie has so much to say about corporate culture, and the 80s and greed and drug use. When I was watching it again yesterday, I was like, you know, it's one of those things where like there's something you can't quite pin, and then you get it, and you're like, oh, I got it. It's like a coda. I realized like what makes this world so outlandish, and I realized it's a world without empathy. Nobody except RoboCop or except
Lewis.
well yeah Lewis too, but he but the Lewis the his partner and who's sort of like androgynous and Murphy, the Peter Weller's character before he was RoboCop. Like even like when he is like the villain who's great we got to talk about is like you must think I'm a not a very nice guy and he's like buddy I think you're slime. It's so corny because it's a world where nobody has any earnestness. And it's so funny comparing this seeing this a week after having seen Superman twice and talking about it with you on your show. Because that movie's all about earnestness and you know like this
Compassion.
movie's like if somebody had Superman's point of view in a world where everybody's just the most evil scumbag.
When you watch RoboCop, or RoboDoc, I'm sorry, the woman that plays his wife, she's only like very, very briefly in the movie, but she said that when she's reading the script, she's like, "Am I the only person in this movie that's a good person?" Versus, you know, like everyone else except for Murphy. And that when you think about it that way, you're like, "Oh my God, yeah, you're right. Everyone is bad in this movie."
And the criminals who are murdering people and selling drugs are just as bad as the corporate executives. And we find out that they're actually working together, because the corporate executives have no empathy for each other. And you know, in the first scene, they're in a this great boardroom, and Dick Jones, played by Ronnie Cox from you know Beverly Hills Cop. He's like, oh, you know, he presents his thing, which is Ed 209, which means Enforcement Droid 209. And you've probably seen this. It's great stop motion. It's this giant, like big, like hunking, like droid. Like it's like a tank that could walk. And it comes in, and he tells like this low level dude at the in the boardroom, like, here, hold this gun and threaten him with it. And he does, and then the machine's like, you know. You have 15 seconds to put the weapon away and comply. So he puts the gun away, but then he's like, you have 10 seconds. You have 5 seconds. And they realize that it's fucking up and it's gonna kill him. And then like he starts running around and everyone's like, get away from me. I don't want to be near you. So everyone's like pushing him away. Everyone's screaming, but no one gives a shit. And then afterwards, like no one really cares that much that this guy just got murdered. And it's just like it's so everyone lacks, empathy. It's like, I was thinking about, have you ever seen the movie Wall Street?
No.
So Wall Street,
Michael Douglas, yeah.
yeah, that comes out actually a few months after this,
Okay.
the same year. But Wall Street is famous because it's got a very like evil like main character, like this greedy guy, and he gives this speech called Greed is Good, where he's explaining that your American desire to want more and screw over other people is inherently good in you. And I feel like
Right.
that's what this movie is also criticizing.
1,000%. Yeah. The sequence with Ed 209, that is what establishes this movie. And I think that was one of the first things I saw of this movie was that sequence. It was probably even edited for television to where there's not like 900 bloody squibs going
Oh,
off
yeah.
on this guy. He's just getting fucking destroyed, like turned into meat in this boardroom. What's really interesting about that sequence is Ed 209 is made by Phil Tippett, who's this like stop motion genius who like when I think of Phil Tippett, I always think of the Imperial Walkers
Oh,
in
yeah.
Star Wars, right?
Free to go
And the thing,
motion.
right, exactly. And so that sequence I feel like kind of sums up the whole movie. It's so interesting because it's a guy that basically uses stop motion to make things in Star Wars, and then it's like Star Wars is in a galaxy far, far away. It's in a long time ago. There's noble people in Star Wars. It's like this is what we would do
Yeah,
with this
it's so
kind of
interesting. Yeah.
machinery in our stupid world that we live in with our greedy people that control everything,
Right.
you know?
But then the great comedy of it, right? The great satiric, everything has a satirical edge to it, is that at the end, RoboCop is like fighting Ed 209, and all RoboCop has to do is like go downstairs because they didn't think of the fact that it can't go downstairs.
Yep.
And it's just like, it's meant to be funny. It's not maybe ha ha funny when you're watching it. But
Right.
if you can watch it with like a little bit of an arm's distance and be really thinking about what you're looking at, like that's a joke, but it's also saying
Yeah.
something about just the stupidity of corporate thinking.
Yeah. The movie is amazing because it is ridiculously absurd. And it's like right in your face how absurd it is, which we talked about in our last recording about how like filmmaking it kind of presents this mirror, and we were saying that like it makes you think a certain way about reality. This is like, man, do we live in a stupid world filled with greedy, heartless people? But what's amazing about RoboCop is besides that, it also just has like some of the most quotable lines of dialogue.
Oh my
Some of
God.
the most the music is incredible. The design of RoboCop himself is like standalone, like
So
amazing,
good.
you know?
So good.
Yeah.
And it's practical, which is
Right.
amazing.
Right. I mean, I know
Yeah.
we're kind of jumping all over the place and stuff, and that's okay because I think we're so excited, but like, can we talk about RoboCop himself, the way he
Yeah, please.
looks?
Yeah.
Okay, so they go into great detail about this with the RoboDoc documentary, and they talk about how like he RoboCop is kind of inspired by Judge Dredd. Like Ed Neumeier was kind of inspired by Judge Dredd. Ed Neumeier is one of the screenwriters. And then like they were really, really having a hard time coming up with a good suit for Peter Weller to be in. They didn't they just kept fighting about the design of it. And then Ed Neumeier had this like illustration book where it's like these sort of like cybernetic women that are very sleek and smooth, but they're like kind of robot-like. And then he gave that to Rob Bottin, who's another like special effects like
Yeah.
genius. And then that's where they come up with this like sleek suit for RoboCop. And one of my favorite parts of the documentary is how they talk about how Peter Weller tried to put the suit on, took like 10 hours to get him to like put on the suit and move around in the suit, and he couldn't move. And like they were going to shut down the whole movie because of it. And one of the things that just shows how great this movie is that Peter Weller for months trained with like a movement coach with like this French mime, and he told him how to move to be this robotic character. And then they fly in that guy, and I wish I remembered his name, but like he tells them how to cut the suit and to fix the suit
Yeah.
so that Peter Weller can move. And to me, it's like you talked about movies, like how it's amazing that any good movies are ever made. Like it's like moments like that, which I'm like, oh my God, that's so interesting and exciting. You
Yeah.
know, this movie wasn't even going to exist, but then this movement coach, this mime, figures out how to make it work, you know?
Yeah, it's also speaks to like how if they had CGI, they would have just easily done it and it would have not have been as effective.
Yes. Well, like every detail of this movie is interesting. That's why RoboDoc is so good, because it goes into every single, it's 4 hours long, you know? And just the way that Peter Weller chooses to move and stuff, they say like that the RoboCop thinks with his chest. So
Yeah.
like every time he's walking, his chest moves first, then his head. And it like really gives you the idea of like this is a robot
Yeah.
versus this is a guy in a fucking suit. And it's just, oh God, I love this movie so much.
I wanna reference, you were talking about that artist. The artist that's famous for making these like really sleek, sexy robot illustrations is named Hajime Soriyama. And you might have seen their stuff on like Instagram and stuff. I actually was going back to Superman, the Superman robots, I think, remind me a little bit of RoboCop. Because of that idea of like
Yes.
the sort of Geordi LaForge like visor instead of eyes. There's also a Rick and Morty
Right.
where like they buy like Rick buys Morty like a sex robot, and it's basically based on one of these robots.
Right.
You go back, you were talking about dialogue. The villain's name is Clarence Boddicker, and he's
Oh
played
my
by
God.
Kirkwood Smith, who I think a lot of people know is the dad from That 70s Show.
Yeah.
And he's such brilliant casting, because if you were to read the character, you wouldn't immediately pick this actor, because he's like, he's balding, he's short, he's little, he wears glasses, he sort of almost seems nebbishy, yet somehow it works so perfectly that he is this evil fucking guy, and he has some of the best lines in the movie, like
Yeah.
bitches leave, and is a famous one, or can you fly, Bobby? He like
Oh my God.
he has such
Yeah.
he has a way of taking lines and like just saying them in really crazy ways too, like just crazy line deliveries.
Yes. I kind of almost have like a boner about how excited I am about Clarence Boddicker, because like Kurtwood Smith, he's done voice acting too. He did a lot of voice acting with the Justice League stuff when we were kids, in that era. And his voice is so distinct, and he's not threatening looking at all when you look at him, not in this context, but he's
Right.
so fucking menacing and scary. And I mean, yeah, I remember as a kid, besides the Ed 209 part, the part when they're Murphy and Lewis are chasing them in the cop car, and the guy gets shot, and he says, like you said, can you fly, Bobby? And like, I remember like that really bothered me as a kid. I was like, oh my God, that's his friend, and he's just
Right.
throwing him at the cops. But like,
It's a world
it's
without empathy.
right. And like, he has so many lines. Like, when he comes in and he talks to the receptionist
Oh,
at
man.
Dick Jones's office, he's like, I got some free time later. Maybe you can fit me in. Like, he says that. And it's so cheesy, but it's just like, I love it. And the thing is, Mike, is that like, he's just one of a gang. He's the leader, but
Yeah.
like, every fucking member of the gang is memorable and awesome
Oh,
too.
yeah. There's the guy Joe who laughs like a hyena, which makes
Ah.
everything seem really like outlandish and crazy. And very cold, like something horrible will be happening, and he'll be laughing like a hyena. And it's like, geez, I kind of want to talk about Murphy's death, because I feel like that is a really important scene, and that's the scene that probably of every, that's the scene that stands out to me most in this movie. Like, if you would
Yeah.
be like, could show somebody like a disturbing death scene, I think
Yeah.
everything about Murphy's death is that way. Do you feel that way about that scene?
Yes. I mean, Mike, we could spend our entire recording just talking about that scene.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know we're going to talk about the deeper parts of it, but I just want to talk about the practical parts of it for a
Yeah.
second. But like, they shoot off Peter Weller's hand, and the prosthetics and everything are like super graphic and disturbing. But then when he's finally like shot and killed, they used a puppet of Peter Weller, and he's like, it's just half of his body from his torso up. And the puppet looks just like fucking Peter Weller, and the shot is ridiculous because you're seeing this puppet's face. It's like squirming in agony, and then the camera goes around the back of his head, and you see the fucking back of his head blowout.
Yeah.
And like, just, I think I did see that as a kid at one point. That just, it was like, it's almost like I can't watch this. Like, it's too
Yeah.
much.
It's and I think too much is almost like this movie's motto, or like Verhoeven's motto, like too much.
Right.
That could be the motto for his whole career, like too much.
Right.
Yeah, it's yeah, from a practical point of view, it's absolutely stunning. But from a dramatic point of view, it's, you know, this is our lead character. We've met him. He's a, you know, young guy. We know that he has a kid that he loves and a family. We're just getting to know him. He, you know, he chases down these guys. He's with his partner, Lewis. They go to this old mill, which we should also talk a little bit about, like, the Detroit of it all and the fall of the auto manufacturing industry and how that leads to crime and stuff and how that really happened.
Yeah.
And you know, he approaches the that he approaches one of the guys in this old mill, and then he's got him by gunpoint, but then like all the rest of the gang come out and they've all got guns and he's kind of like fucked. And his partner Lewis is knocked out somewhere. And they just first they you know, Boddicker starts like fucking with him and playing with him, and they're kind of like torturing him mentally as well as physically. Like you said, they shoot his arm off, like clean off, which is just you can't like, you know, none of us, most of us will never experience something like that. And you can't even imagine what that must feel like, the pain.
Right.
And then like it's not like they kill him a second after that. Like they let him like walk around a little bit like in pain. And Peter Weller plays it really well, as like he's so shocked by what's happened, he's not even defending himself. He's just sort of like stunned, like sort of like stuttering around. And it's
Right.
also like, again, it's cold. It's there's no empathy. You know, if you were watching this movie for the first time, I guess you know that he's got to somehow become RoboCop. But
Right.
this is our lead character, and he's just been like maimed in this way. And
Yep.
then they just like shoot him a bunch in the chest, and it's just, again, it's like squibs like crazy. It's blood like crazy. He's like, you know, like he's, you know, he's always like dancing, like when he's like so filled with blood. So filled with squibs. And then very almost like Boddicker's done playing with him, he just shoots him in the head, like it's over. And then he's
Right.
basically dead, and then they turn him into RoboCop.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that like Ed Neumeier was really intrigued by the idea of the main character dying in Psycho, or like what you would assume was the main character dying very
Yeah.
early on in Psycho, right? And that's kind of what this is, because you know Peter Weller is the main character, and I think the audience even back then knew that, like, okay, well, he has to become RoboCop, so
Yeah.
something has to happen to him. But you know, we have to talk about the fact that like Paul Verhoeven was very much wanting to use RoboCop as a metaphor for Jesus in this world.
Right.
And like, even like Paul Verhoeven, who's this like filmmaker who's wanting to get into American films, but he's still like in Europe and stuff. He even didn't like get bought in by the script when he first read it. Then his wife was reading it when they were on vacation, and she showed him this scene,
Yeah.
and that's where he made that connection with like Jesus.
It's
And
like
he
the
wanted to.
passion, yeah.
Right, exactly. It's like that thing of like, okay, well, he's like suffering, and
Yeah.
it's just like prolonged suffering, and it's horrible what other humans do to this person. And you know, we talked about what do you call it, Joe Cox, you know, I think Jesse
Ronnie
B.
Cox.
Goines. Well, no, I think Joe Cox is the
Character?
he's yeah, Jesse D. Goines is
Oh,
the
okay.
guy,
Yeah,
the guy that's laughing like a hyena, right?
yeah.
He has that one line where he's like, does it hurt? Or does it hurt? Right? And it's like
Yeah.
so fucking gross and mean,
Yeah.
but like you want him to get revenge by the
Yeah.
end of this movie. And I don't know. It's just the scene, it's like it's such a standout, amazing scene.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I want to talk about the Jesus of it, because Verhoeven talks about that, but I feel like he doesn't elaborate on. I feel like there's something deeper there, because it is Jesus, but it's like it's a satirical Jesus. It's the American Jesus. Like he because he ends up being he's resurrected through corporation and technology and just being completely controlled. by other forces. So it's not like Zack Snyder's Superman, where it's like a beat you over the head Jesus metaphor. It's almost like this is the American Jesus. He's brought back for profit motive.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that that's true. But then I think that he does have like a rebirth, but it's at the very end of the movie. I think that like when he recovers his memories and he remembers his identity, that's when he's truly reborn. And I think he's kind of a Jesus for the audience because this movie is so gross. You know, you've made references to Superman a lot recently. Like Superman is this idea of what if we had this amazing figure that was in our world, and what could he do in our world? Like RoboCop is kind of like that, but only at the very end when it's like it's a world full of horrible people, but this good person is able to like come back and maybe do good in the world. But by the very end, like the last like 30 minutes of the movie.
It's sort of like a superhero origin story.
Yes. The movie it's like the prototypical superhero origin movie, especially for when it comes out, right? Because it comes out like just right before Batman, and it has that sequence where it's like it's got the origin story and it's going a certain way, and then there's a very clear defined point where it's like when Spider-Man first has his suit and he's like swinging around stopping crime in the Sam Raimi movie. I mean there's many superhero movies like this, but like when he's like driving around in the cop car and it's playing that RoboCop theme for the first time,
He's
that's when
great.
it's like this is a fucking superhero movie. It's like Superman the 1975 or 78 one.
Yes, there's a montage of his first night and like him saving people, doing things.
It's the exact same thing. Yes, yes.
And I say I love the theme. I love
Oh.
RoboCop's theme. It's so recognizable, it's hummable. It's great.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the sequence where they're making him, which is all done in first person.
Oh.
It's really, really great sequence. Murphy's killed essentially, and we then see like them kind of like first you see like him like kind of hazily awake as like doctors are operating on him, but they're like, this guy's gone, let's just call him, let's just and then the next thing we know, like he wakes up and like he's being like his eyes through his first person's eyes, it looks like video footage. And there's this attractive like scientist woman who wears like these big blue frame glasses.
Yeah.
And we see people talking about him and working on him. They give him like this screen see them drill like this screen into his eyes. There's this really, really, really dark. If you know, this movie could be disturbing, I think, if you're not ready for it, because it's got such dark stuff in it. There's this
Yeah.
dark humor where the scientist is like, oh, we were able to save one of his arms. And then the guy, what's his name? The one who like comes up with RoboCop.
Miguel Ferrer. His name is Bob Morton. Bob Morton.
Morton's like, oh, but we said that it was going to be completely cybernetic. And they're like, yeah, but we were able to save one of his arms. And he was like, nah, get rid of the arm. So he has an arm that they saved, and they just cut it off and get rid of it anyway. Oh, it's so dark.
Yes.
This
I
movie's
that
filled with dark
sequence.
things like that.
Yes, and we should go into it, but I really want to talk about what's so amazing about that sequence
Yeah,
too,
please.
right? First of all, that actress that you see a lot in that sequence, I wish I had written down her name, but she wore a lot of her own clothing for those sequences, and she had those glasses. And I think it's funny because like in the 80s, the way that we thought of beauty and what was attractive and what was in ads and stuff, those big giant glasses would seem weird or off-putting. But I think in our modern day, I mean, I'm all into that. When I see her with those big glasses, I'm like, oh yeah, please give me a kiss instead of RoboCop, right? And then like everything is done with like as if he doesn't matter. He's just a product. No one's even thinking about him as a human, which goes on with the arm thing you said. But I want to just talk about like from the technical point of view, there's no digital stuff in this sequence at all. So like everything is just composite, like where they film. Like they draw stuff, like animate, like his targeting scope and all the grid and stuff. That's all just fucking hand drawn and then composited over the film, which is amazing. Another thing, because I want to make sure I sneak this in here somewhere during our discussion, but like when he goes to end that hostage situation and he's like looking through the wall, that's not like in Predator where they're using actual like heat vision to record something. The guy who was doing the special effects, the visual effects for that, he just spray painted body suits to look like people's heat signatures. Like I like this when you hear about this stuff in the making of the movie, it's just like, how did this they get this all right? It's amazing. You know, when they reveal him, like when he's revealed, like Rob Bottin, the guy that came up with the design for him, like he said, okay, make it like very staggered and we only see bits of him. And it's like so fucking effective the way he's like revealed. Go ahead.
The first time we see his RoboCop face, it's still first person, but there are cameras on him. So as he's walking, he passes a monitor and you can see him on the monitor, which is such a great early like peek at what he looks like. It also it's I mean it, from a cinematic point of view, it even though he loses his his consciousness, he loses who Murphy is and all that stuff, by putting us in his point of view continuously, it keeps him as our protagonist. Even though he might not remember who he is, we do. And we are still experiencing the movie through his eyes, literally. And then he begins to it just, I guess, is a glitch of the system. He starts his memories start to come back.
Yeah, and just like every choice in the movie is so dead on, they did the right thing, right? Because you could have had RoboCop's introduction where there's like a crime going on and he shows up in the crime and it's like, oh my God, what is this? Right? Look how badass he is. But no, it's like he's revealed to the other cops at first. And we're like pushing him as a product. And like the very first time we like see him head on, he's in that chair that he kind of like sits in to be like reprogrammed and stuff. And like what's such an effective tool in filmmaking is to show how other characters react to something. And like you just see all these other cops, like the cops like literally run down the hall to see him when he shows up, you know? It's like such a big deal when he shows up, and he doesn't even do action at first. It's just like listening to his footsteps down the hall, and the sound design is fucking amazing in this movie. When the guy goes to throw the keys, and then he catches the keys, and it's just like everything's fucking badass. It's just oh my God, yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's this great satire, but at the same time, you're like, yeah, RoboCop.
Right.
Go
And I
ahead
mean,
and, yeah,
we should talk about. Go ahead.
I mean, that shows the power of cinema, right? And cinema's ability to make us crave violence. When you do like a revenge story like this, you like we like you his death is so brutal, we so want to see Boddicker die. We can't wait for RoboCop to get back at all the people who killed Murphy. That's like you don't realize like what you're fucking rooting for is like pretty fucking violent.
You know, it's funny because in our last recording, we talked about Dark City. That's Alex Proyas. Alex Proyas made his mark with The Crow. This movie's very similar to The Crow. It's in fucking Detroit, first of all. They're both Detroit. But in both situations, this gang brutally murders this guy, ends his like good life that he has, and you're just waiting for him to like pick them off one by one. And he does.
So wow, I didn't put that together. Yeah, it's a lot like The Crow, actually. So the
Because
thing
in
with
the
the
Crow, and in this, there's this general sense, there's these lines of dialogue where they're talking about how bad the world has gotten, how bad crime is. The cops constantly talk about striking because like cops are just dying left and right, you know?
But what's so fascinating, right, on the macro sort of critique that's going on is, in real life, the steel industry and the car manufacturing industry was in Detroit, and then as foreign markets opened and we started importing cars more from different places, the American manufacturer of cars sort of died out. And this led to Detroit declining and crime rising. That's what really happened. In this movie, it takes place in a near future, and you've got what they call old Detroit, which is just crime ridden. And then the corporation this giant corporation, what is it, OCP,
OCP. Yeah.
they are creating a new futuristic city called Delta City, and they also own the police force. So in this movie, the police force, even besides RoboCop, the police are militarized and privatized. They're owned by a company, right? An executive could go in and tell the police what to do because they're not really just working for the public trust.
Right.
And like that's what's interesting. Like you root for RoboCop because he's like stopping crime, but the same system that makes RoboCop also makes the crime. The corporation creates the problem and then sells it the solution, which is what really happens with corporations.
Yes. Yeah, and what's crazy about this movie is that I don't know, maybe there's like 6 minutes after Clarence Boddicker is killed where it's like, okay, he's gotten his revenge, right? If we're looking at it from a revenge point of view, the movie's done there, right? Because he kills the guy that he's killed all of them. And then but there's more. It's like, no. There's a deeper evil. There's this corporate evil that Ronnie Cox represents, you know, with Dick Jones. And it has like two satisfying endings. I think the ending with Ronnie Cox dying is actually more satisfying than when Kurtwood Smith dies.
Yes, because we learn that Ronnie Cox is the one who sort of hired Boddicker, and he's the sort of corporate behind the drug trade. So again, like
Right.
the drug trade in old Detroit is tied to the corporation that's building the new Detroit, which is creating the drug problem.
Yeah.
It's you know it's like when they say like poverty is never an accident. Like this is what's happening in this movie, and it's just satisfying because we learn that RoboCop has these three like directives, like the work of the public trust. I forget what they all are, but then there's a fourth one that they don't show you, and you find out that the fourth one that he's programmed with is he can't harm or arrest anybody who's an executive at that company.
Right.
So when he at the end when he wants to arrest Ronnie Cox, he really can't. But then the old man who like runs the company, and his character is just credited as old man.
Right.
Ronnie Cox takes him as a hostage, and the old man's like, "You're fired," which leads RoboCop to be like, "All right, now I can kill him because he doesn't really work there." And then he kills him, and then you have the worst effect in the movie, which is
Yes.
Ronnie Cox with the two long arms,
Yes.
which is famous for how bad it is. But
Yeah.
such a great ending. Just it's so satisfying. Like you're fired, and then he's got the right to kill him.
Right. That ending, I mean, we still need to talk about more of the movie itself in the middle and stuff too, but the ending with Ronnie Cox, it's funny because my mom was like very prudish when I was a kid as to like what I could see, and she would always put stuff like put her hand over my eyes for certain parts, right? And she wouldn't want me to see RoboCop in general. Just with like the violence, right? But there was something about that ending that it'd be okay for me to see that because the ending is so satisfying, you know, where he's like, "You're fired," and then he says, "Thank you," and then he shoots him, and then he twirls the gun in his hand. I think that like the satisfaction of the ending is so strong that it was like it justifies me watching this guy get blown away and fall out of building, even when I was a little kid. It's funny, just one point to go along with what you were saying before is that the movie could end maybe like 30 minutes or more earlier because he does arrest Clarence Boddicker like at one point in the movie, and it's like, well, that could be the end of the movie. But then there's this sort of like this twist with what you said with the fourth directive where he goes to confront Dick Jones, and Dick Jones is like, you can't hurt an OCP executive. And so it kind of like makes it like, oh no, this is deeper. He's going after the corporate greed. Like the corporation is the real power to worry about, you
There's
know?
also a great irony in the fact that he doesn't just arrest people, he murders people. Like if you give him any resistance, he just murders you brutally. He also creates
Yes.
a he also creates a lot of collateral damage. So
Yes.
again, like that's a perfect example of like when you really look at it, it's satirical and it's making fun of what we see in movies for the most part, right?
Yes.
I mean, action movies and Western movies and now superhero movies, a lot of it is about how to justify violence. Like, is violence justified in some way? How do you get people to justify it? And like he'll be like, like he'll go to arrest somebody and then like just blow them away in like such a crazy violent way.
You say that, but it's kind of funny when they do that montage showing him arrest people, he doesn't actually kill anyone. Maybe he kills the guy that's taking the hostages in the beginning because he knocks him out of a window,
Out of the
right?
guy's dick.
See, that's I wanted to talk about that montage because like the very first time you see him in action, there's that guy that's holding up the convenience store. And it's so funny and so good because he's just shooting him with a machine gun and he's like, fuck me. Fuck me, right? But then RoboCop like bends the machine gun's muzzle or whatever the fuck it is that thing you shoot the bullets from, and then he like knocks him into the drink cooler, right? And so there's a lot of like people flying through glass,
For
flying
sure,
through windows in this movie, but he doesn't kill that guy, right? And then there's the two guys that are trying to rape this woman, like just mutilate this woman, and he shoots the guy in the dick, like through her dress. But he doesn't kill that guy either, right?
Well, you're right, yeah.
He really only like starts straight up killing people when he goes into that factory and they're all shooting him with machine guns and he's just like taking them out one by one. But I do think that you make an excellent, excellent point about how it's like justifying violence because like he doesn't like it'd be much different if like he just walked in and just shot criminals and then didn't even say anything and walked out. He'd be like very scary and menacing, but it's like the criminals always go like over the top at
Oh
him
yeah,
and then
sure.
he just like shuts them down.
But then there's the deeper thing, right? Of like, all right, the guy who's robbing the convenience store. Maybe that guy had a job once when old Detroit was a real bustling city, and because of what the corporations did and creating this new city, he's lost a job, and that's what turned him to crime. And then the corporation creates RoboCop to stop him. That's what I love about it, because like I'm talking about it deeply, but it's also can be enjoyed on a not deep way. Like it really is. It is just a fun movie.
But it's funny because like we talked about Dark City in our last recording, and I kept saying that maybe like Alex Proyas was more into like the visuals of it, and that was the inspiration. When you watch the documentary about this, you see that like everything is thought about. Everything has meaning to it. And so like everything that you're alluding to, I actually do believe with the screenwriting and with Paul Verhoeven's direction, I think it is in there.
Yeah,
Can
go
we
on.
talk about the gang like a little bit more?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. So one of the things I love about this movie is, and you and I always talk about David Lynch, is that there's like Twin Peaks people in this. Ray Wise is in it. Like, okay. I can't, like, when we say lightning in a bottle, every fucking member of this gang is perfect. Like, Ray Wise is in it, and he's like so over the top. I love the sequence when RoboCop goes into the club, and he kicks him in the crotch, and he hurts his foot. And then RoboCop pulls him out, and Ray Wise is like so over the top with his acting in general, and so emotive. I love when he like pulls him out of the club. The guy that plays, what the fuck? The Paul McCrane, who plays Emil, he was on ER, and he was this fucking horrible villain doctor on ER that you like loathe. But he always like kind of played like meek characters before he plays Emil, and I think he's fucking great with his weird facial hair, and like every member of the gang is just so great, you know?
Let's talk about Emil's death.
Of course, of course.
It's one of the best things in the movie.
Yes. It's like so over the top and ridiculous, and it's like used on top 10 lists and stuff like that, where he just, first of all, the stunt is amazing. There's a guy, a stuntman in a RoboCop suit, and he just walks as a car drives like right by him into that toxic waste vat, you know?
And I guess the toxic waste, like, it comes out through and kind of like washes through the vehicle he's in, and then he comes out and he's immediately like melting. It reminds me a lot of like Toxic Avenger. He's melting and he goes up to Ray Wise, and Ray Wise is like, "Ah, get away from me," because no one has empathy. So like just the fact that this guy's like immediately melting is great. And then Clarence like hits him with his car and he like explodes.
He shatters. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. It like his he's saying stuff like he's like, "Help me, help me." And he's like so pathetic, and his breathing is like real ragged. It's It's such a horrible moment, but it's like you have like the movie, there's great things from beginning to end. And that's just like, oh my God, you have this too. I forgot because I was saying there's Twin Peaks people in it too. Miguel Ferrer is from Twin Peaks as well, you know? And even when he fucking dies, that sequence is fucking amazing too.
Oh yeah. Oh, he's with the two sex workers and he's doing coke with them,
Yes.
and then Bodica comes in. He has like a fucking grenade that he like leaves on the coffee table.
Yeah.
So good. And
And I
you're
mean,
kind of like, well, the main villain just died. What's gonna happen now?
right. Yeah, I mean, it's just like there's all these little details that are so great. Like that's the first time that like a DVD is ever used because
Oh
they put a
wow.
disc in the player and like it has a video on it, right?
Oh wow,
And
yeah.
then also, well, they were going to shut down production on this movie because it cost so much money. And so there's the sequence when Dick Jones confronts Morton in the bathroom.
Yes.
And they show that scene. They show that to the executives. And then the executives love that scene so much that they let them keep filming the movie. But when you watch RoboDoc, Ronnie Cox talks about how Miguel Ferreira didn't want Ronnie Cox to grab his hair like he does. And I fucking love their facial expressions, the way their body language. That scene is so good too.
I love how queer-coded it is. It's so gay. They're like in a bathroom, and we begin with like they walk in, and you see Ronnie Cox is like, I guess, taking a shit. We see his like pants around his ankles, and then he
Right.
comes in, and then it's just like way so intimate. The way he's up at his face, the way he grabs his hair, it's so wildly like charged. It's crazy.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Because like you kind of keep talking about how like, well, there's this fun quality to this and it's like kind of indulging our American desire for violence, but there's so much more to it just in a filmmaking level that's exciting. Like the fact that they choose to shoot behind his leg and up from the stall, that's just so dynamic and interesting looking that like in an American film you wouldn't have that kind of shot. And then like he doesn't wash his fucking hands. And he it's just so like, oh, it's so gross and disturbing. I love it.
You know, something that I don't, I must have missed the first time I saw it because it's very, it's not subtle, but you can miss it, which is Ronald Reagan dies in this movie. One of the news reports in the beginning, they talk about Star Wars, which was Star Wars. Ronald Reagan had this idea. I don't know if they actually made it or didn't, to be
I
honest
don't
with you.
think so. Yeah.
It was this idea of a missile defense program, and he called it Star Wars. Like that's not what it was really called, but that was like what the public called it. And the
Right.
idea was like if during the Cold War Russia ever like tried to like drop a
Nuke.
nuclear weapon on us, a nuclear a bomb on us, we would use lasers to like shoot it or whatever. So it was called
Right.
Star Wars. So in this, Star Wars it exists and it's up there and running. But then at the end, there's a news report like, oh, the Star Wars defense system malfunctioned today and destroyed all of Santa Barbara,
Right.
including two former retired presidents. So I looked it up and Reagan retired to Santa Barbara. So, and Reagan created Star Wars idea. And
Right.
he's also like, you know, he's the poster boy for the 80s. He was a movie star who was a corporate shill. He sold cigarettes. He was the president of the Screen Actors Guild. He was just like a puppet for hire his whole pathetic career. He did nothing during the AIDS crisis. And then without saying they killed him, they kill him.
Yeah,
And he
yeah,
dies by his own hand,
yeah,
basically. It's so
yeah.
great. And I don't know who the
It's
other president's supposed to be. I'm wondering if it's supposed to be Bush. I'm not sure.
yeah. You know, it's so amazing when you think about it, right? Because, like, who you and I are is so based on Ronald Reagan's actions, right? I know that sounds so weird, and I'm like really going out on a limb here, but like. Because of many of the things he did, but one of the things he did was like he allowed for like commercialism during kids programming. And kids programming became about selling toys by the 80s. I mean, it always was, but like in the 80s, it was like on cocaine, right? Like
Like
literally,
you were
right?
allowed, basically, you would allow. there were laws, there were regulations in place, and then
Right.
without him, there wouldn't be He-Man or Transformers.
Exactly. And so you mentioned this already, but like the idea of like these sort of like ultra violent movies with like deeper meanings becoming fucking toys that you get at Toys R Us, like a RoboCop toy, Ed 209 toy, which I had, I had those. It's because of what Ronald Reagan did.
Yeah.
And like RoboCop would still be around, it would still have an impact, but it wouldn't be part of the zeitgeist as much if like kids didn't have toys of him and thought about him too,
Yeah,
you
yeah, yeah.
know?
It's so interesting.
Like one thing I want to make a point of too is like, you and I have talked to David Weiner and like he's done In Search of Darkness and In Search of Tomorrow. Whenever you look at his like posters that have all these 80s things on them for In Search of Tomorrow, there's always like three fucking movies that are always on there, always, right? There's always RoboCop, Blade Runner, and what the fuck was the other one? RoboCop, Blade Runner, and Aliens,
Yeah.
right? And like there's no fucking Blade Runner toys, right? And that's probably why Blade Runner's not looked at the same way
That's
RoboCop
true.
is, Aliens, Predator, because there's fucking Predator toys too. But I think it's just so interesting that like Alien, the original Alien, is by a non-American filmmaker. RoboCop is a non-American filmmaker. Blade Runner, it's the same person, it's Ridley Scott, right? But like these movies that essentially like affect our consciousness and like how we view sci-fi and then the world are made by these non-American filmmakers and like are just visually so fucking striking and
Yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
They've left their imprint, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Reagan.
Reagan.
Am I right? Yeah, there's it's funny the way bringing up He-Man makes me think about RoboCop because it's like there are it's like those two levels. Like I love He-Man, but I also know that it's just a toy commercial. And it also and that it's like it's completely about justified violence and gender stereotypes and things like that. That's why I love like She-Ra Princesses of Power because like years later it becomes recaptured by this transgendered artist who creates this She-Ra show that's like totally progressive and like they don't even make toys for it. So like that series becomes something different. We got to wrap up a little bit, but let's talk a little bit about I got to tell you, I've not seen two or three. Have you seen them?
Well, I saw two in bits and pieces. I've not seen three. And I've seen the remake too.
So, okay, I saw half the remake. I really disliked it.
Ditto.
What are your feelings on the remake?
It's just like the remake of Total Recall where it loses its personality completely.
Yeah.
They like hit these beats to be like, hey, you remember this? Remember,
Yeah.
like, this is what you like, but it's like it's just pictures of what you like. It's not, they use some of the dialogue,
Yeah.
but there's nothing to it. The only thing that's good about the remake is this one body horror scene
Yeah.
where they
Yeah.
allow RoboCop to see his body like in a mirror or what's
Yeah.
left of his body. That's the only good thing in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember me being like, there's no satire in it. It's like earnest.
Right.
Like, how can you remake RoboCop and take out its humor?
Right.
And also, the design of RoboCop is exactly the wrong thing. They made it
Right.
leak and tried to be like this is a modern RoboCop, but it's like all the charm is gone.
Right.
Yeah.
And they make it to where he kind of has some of his humanity still in it. But like that's one of the most important things about this movie. What's one of the most exciting things about this movie is him remembering who he was. And it's like
Yes.
piece by piece he puts it back, you know?
It was so misguided. I couldn't even finish it.
Yeah.
Oh, I
You know,
totally forgot there was a Total Recall remake until you just said it.
and that's Paul Verhoeven too, right? That made the original.
Yes.
But what I was going to say though, going back to like you and I, we came up with these two recordings of like Dark City and RoboCop, and like it, I think it kind of works as a pairing, even though it's like very, very different movies. But like there's the idea of like people being programmed, like Murphy is programmed to be RoboCop, but then like what's underneath eventually comes out, you
Yeah.
know? And that's, I think that both of them, that's the idea of like the soul. It's like there's something more to us than just our programming or just our circumstances. You know?
Right. We have like a spirit that'll get through all of this shit.
Yeah. One other thing I want to point out too is like you mentioned She-Ra and He-Man. What's great about those 80s cartoons is that the villains, there's the main villain like Megatron, Cobra Commander, Skeletor, right? But then there's like always the interesting side characters too. It's not just like an army and one guy. And that's what's so great about this movie is that there's multiple villains. They're all interesting. And there's so much fucking quotable dialogue from them and from everybody in this movie. It's so fucking good.
You would think that with this kind of a setup and a world, that they could have made more good RoboCop stuff, but they kind of don't, right? I've heard that, I think Brian on your show was talking to me about the video game, the most recent video game, supposed to be very good.
Yeah.
And I've never read, I'm sure that at some point they've done RoboCop comics, right?
Absolutely, they have.
Like,
Yes,
I don't
yes.
know if any of them are good, but you feel like
Right.
it could, you know, why, you know, but again, it's like you said, it's lightning in a bottle. Like, even
Yeah.
I want to see part two because I just want to see how they get it wrong. And I've heard
Right.
three is really bad.
Yeah, it's got like ninjas and he has like a jetpack and stuff. But just like to talk about the idea of like, well, why isn't it good? You have like a lot of the same materials. You have Peter Weller is RoboCop in the second one, but he's not in the third one. And then like I think what happens is because we talked about this in our last video too, there's the collaborative process. There's all the different people making a film. And I think the lightning in a bottle happens when it's the combination of certain people. And when you take out certain people and then replace them with others, it just doesn't click. It doesn't work right. The cake doesn't bake the right way. Yeah.
And Verhoeven's not involved in the second one, right?
No, I don't think so, no.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Peter, it's been a pleasure to have you here to talk about RoboCop.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your channels.
Hey, we're not going to talk for another hour about RoboCop. I could easily do that.
I know. So could
Yeah.
I.
No. Okay. Well, my other two channels, The Laster Cast with my friend Danny and Comic Books Transformed. The Laster Cast, we talk about horror movies and streaming shows. And Comic Books Transformed, we talk about streaming shows and movies as well, and they're based on comics. You know, Brian and I are going to cover Fantastic Four.
Nice.
Mike, if this is the first time you're listening to me and Mike together, we just did Superman 2025 together with me and Brian, and that was a really great discussion as well. For the Laster Cast, we just did Superman 3, and we talked about that scene with the you know, the scary robot lady and how it traumatized us at the end there. But yeah, I mean, I think we have a good time, and you know, I'm like this on those shows as well. So if you want to hear me talk, you know, come on, check it out. But Mike, I always love coming on your shows, and you are really good at picking things to talk about.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to have you, and I love going on your shows. And I check out the Superman recording we did on Comic Book Transformed. I don't think we're going to do a Superman episode on this show, although me and Peter did an episode of the original 1978 Superman. So you
Yes.
can listen to that as well.
Yeah.
Peter, thank you so much for being here.
Of course, man. It's a pleasure.
We end every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.